training to avoid IMC and training with foggles. Aviation's Great Hoax, I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which you can find online at overtheairwaves.com, and also of Bob Miller Flight Training, which is a Part 61, hoping to soon be Part 141 flight school based in the Buffalo, New York area. And Bob has some perspectives on aviation safety that differ from the big GA groups, and we like to bring those out here on Mondays. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
As always, Paul, it's my pleasure.
In your latest issue, the July issue of Over the Airwaves, you talked about a case in Houston which had some really thought-provoking aspects for all of us who fly in visual conditions which may at some point become instrument conditions.
Well, Paul, I think the point I wanted to make is made right in the last paragraph of that issue, and that is the great hoax that's perpetrated on pilots by everybody from the FAA to flight schools, to individual flight instructors, and that is the belief that 3 hours of a simulated IFR work under a view-limiting device is anything resembling real conditions. And that hoax leads us to believe that IFR conditions are very easily identifiable. They're represented by big white puffy clouds or fog to the ground, and any reasonably self-preservationist type pilot would never ever fly into IFR conditions. And that's what I believe that the hoax created by the view limiting device. As experienced IFR pilots know, or any pilot knows, that instrument conditions, instrument meteorological conditions, can creep up upon us so subtly that in 1 minute we have ground contact and we're just as content as can be, and then literally within seconds we can lose that ground contact due to haze or declining sunset, and find ourselves suddenly immersed into very, very strange surroundings.
I know this kind of occurred to me first when I was doing pattern work, when I was first learning to fly. I'd been signed off to solo, and there'd be days when I'd just go out to the airport to knock out a few takeoffs and landings. I remember if I went out late in the day to the airport where I was doing most of my flying, I remember actually buying flip-up clip-ons for my glasses, because if I was going in one direction, I would have a clear view, and if I was going in the other direction, I was straight into the sun. And I could barely see anything without a good set of amber. I didn't use polarized, but amber blue blockers, I guess they called them. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that this was happening even though technically I was still in visual meteorological conditions. And there are a lot of other things that go with that in the summertime. I mean, if you get up above 3,000 or 4,000 feet over most American cities, you're looking, you're trying to look down through a layer of haze. At certain sun angles, you've got glare that makes it tough to see what should be clear visual landmarks. If you pick up a little bit of rain, it can complicate your visibility. And also, I think a lot of people who wouldn't think of flying after work or after dinner time in the winter, are so thankful for this bonus we get of a couple of extra hours in the summertime here in the Northern Hemisphere, that they plan more trips that push close to darkness during this time of year. And all those things, none of those things are technically IMC, but all of those things have the potential to suddenly leave you dependent on instruments.
Yes, and that sudden sense of strangeness, I've seen it in low-time instrument pilots and in VFR pilots that I take into the clouds or into the conditions that you've just described. It is the first thing that sets up in the pilot's mind is a sense of panic. And we all know that once we're in that panic mode, our ability to think clearly is greatly compromised. So, the point that you make about declining sunset, diminishing visibility in sunsets during hazy conditions, going out over open water, the JFK accident back in the late 90s is a classic example of a scenario where an individual takes off daylight, it goes to night. Night goes to over water flying. They said of the JFK accident, if he had seen only a single light out ahead of him through the windscreen, in the conditions that he was in, he would not have been able to tell whether that single light was a boat or a star. And that's how insidious these conditions become. And the point that I wanted to make in the article is, and I don't know what to do about the airports in the South and in Arizona and New Mexico, where, Lord bless them, they have nothing but beautiful, clear, sunny conditions almost 365 days out of the year. Well, maybe those students ought to come north just for some instrument training that puts them into real IMC conditions, at least for part of their instrument training, and not to be deluded into the belief that simulated instrument work has anything similar, remotely similar, to the real world of IFR flight.
Well, Bob, I would assume that you have in mind a great place they could go up in the Northeast.
Absolutely. But the thing that boggles my mind is the amount of simulated instrument training that I see taking place here in the North, particularly up around the Great Lakes, where we have, I mean, we all complain about the fact that we have nothing but clouds from November 10th until May 30th. Why in the world do we take instrument students and put them under the hood in conditions that are so you know, conducive to real IMC travel, a flight? That boggles the mind. We just don't do it. I don't think we have a pair of foggles in the flight school. You know, we just wait until we get some solid IFR conditions. And sometimes it's for the primary student, that could be lesson number one or lesson number two. They need to have 3 hours of instrument training. We'll take them right up in the clouds right in the first week if the clouds are here with us to train in.
Well, and Bob, I hate to bring this up, but I think you've answered your own question in previous issues of Over the Airwaves, and that is that a lot of folks in your area are probably flying with flight instructors who've never been under anything but foggles.
Oh, man, we can go on for hours on that subject. It's the blind leading the blind, pardon the pun, but that's exactly what's happening. And the innocent public, you know, that sign up for flying lessons or instrument lessons that are being taught by instructors who are intimidated or fearful of real IFR conditions, who then lean back on the regulations and say, well, we can do it all under simulated. I don't know what I would do if I were the FAA administrator, but I would be very inclined to say, you know, there's going to be no instrument rating granted to a student unless they have at least 1 to 2 hours of real IMC flight. And again, I understand that's a problem in the sunny South, but something needs to be done about the fact that, well, we know that continued VFR flight into IMC conditions continues to be the number one weather-related cause of fatal accidents. And that's something that should capture everybody's attention.
I'm talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, and we'll talk more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, and also Bob Miller Flight Training in the Buffalo, New York area. And Bob, in your last issue of Over the Airwaves, you talked about our mutual friend Jim Cavanaugh, who is an aerial photographer of note in the Buffalo area. And you talked about something that happened a few years ago when you noticed the way he was pre-flighting an airplane, and a lesson that perhaps we should all take from that.
Well, Jim had just prior to a flight that I had taken with him, had experienced a very surprising event on his own Cessna 150. He had taxied it out to the active runway and proceeded to advance the throttle for takeoff power, and just happened to look at the oil pressure gauge and noted that it was laying on zero. And he immediately aborted the takeoff, shut the engine down right away, and then upon examination, he had learned that the oil pump had toasted. It just was not pumping any longer. And had he taken off in that condition at the airport that he was at, he had nothing but obstacles at the other end of the airport. I fear that Jim may not have been with us today had he not taken that glance at the oil pressure gauge. So anyway, several months later, I was doing a flight review with him, and he was pre-flighting a rental airplane that we had to use because of our combined weights. Could not do it in the 150.
Mm-hmm.
He had spent, it looked like he spent about 35 minutes on the pre-flight. And I yelled out to him, I said, "Hey, Jim, you're just renting the airplane, you're not buying it." And he laughed and then reminded me of his oil pressure incident several months earlier, and then I immediately saw his point of view. Jim, like a good quality photographer, doesn't accept anything substandard. If there's a problem with a shot, he fixes it. And I think that kind of training passes over to his work with airplanes. If something can go wrong, it will. And we know that about 10% of all fatal accidents are attributed to mechanical problems with the airplane. Some 80% of those accidents are caused by pilot error. 10%, we really don't know what happened, but 10% are caused by mechanical error. And I don't know the percentage, but I suspect a good number of those 10% could have been prevented by not departing in the first place, because the mechanical problems could have been picked up on a simple pre-flight.
You mentioned that it's a rental airplane. Frankly, those scare me a lot more than anything I own, because the next time I go fly, I still have at least some benefit of the 35-minute pre-flight I did the last time I flew. But a rental airplane, you have no idea what that thing's been put through since the last time you saw it.
Absolutely right. You have no idea. And Jim's example left a lasting impression with me, even now that I'm in the business of renting airplanes. I won't go up in them unless I'm absolutely certain I know exactly what's going on with them, every mechanical aspect that I can pick up on a pre-flight. Now, granted, there are certain things that we can't see on a pre-flight, but many, many things that we can. And this is just good common sense to take that extra few minutes, go through that airplane carefully, have a checklist in hand. That's another thing that Jim has. He has he reprints his checklist with every flight so that he can physically check it off with pen on a clipboard that he actually looked at that item on the airplane prior to departure. That's not compulsive behavior. That's just plain common sense, safe behavior.
Well, Bob, we should all emulate Jim, and I really appreciate your sharing that story. And I appreciate your taking a few minutes out for our listeners today.
Thanks, Paul. I enjoy it, too.
You can find a link to Bob Miller's writings on Over the Airwaves at overtheairwaves.com, and you'll also find a link there to Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated. Bob Miller has been my guest, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.